Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball Podcast. It is April 20th, for whatever that may mean to you. And it means we're going to do a podcast. And I'm Scott Pianowski, your host. And we have one of my favorite guests today. Paul Spohr was on our program twice last year, and he was just terrific. And one of the finest working fantasy baseball writers today. He's the editor of fantasy over at Fangraphs. So you know him from the Sleeper and Bust podcast, which is one of the most popular podcasts out there that he does with Jason Collette. And just a good dude, knows a lot about baseball, knows a lot about a lot of things. And we're going to tap into that today. Hello, Mr. Spohr.
Scott, how's it going, man? Thanks so much for having me on.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Obviously, everybody's in the same boat. Just a really unusual time in America and in the world. How are you feeling the hours these days?
Well, you know, I'm still writing over at Fangraphs. Obviously, there's no baseball to go with it, but also streaming a lot more on Twitch. My Twitch hours have jumped substantially, and that's kind of how I'm filling the baseball gap. Playing MLB The Show, Out of the Park Baseball. So I'm still getting a baseball fix, but obviously I would give so much to have real baseball to be going with. But yeah, that's been how I've been filling my time. You know, still doing our work at Fangraphs, but then streaming a lot more right now.
Any extra programming popping in? Been doing any documentaries, movies, a TV series, anything like that?
So I started Ozark after all the talk about season 3 and how great it is. I decided to get it started. I like it so far. I'm only a few episodes in, but I like it. And I'm finally going to get to Better Call Saul, which was never a you know, malicious leave off the list. It was, I just didn't get the ball rolling on it. But once I get the ball rolling on something, I can binge like crazy. And I loved Breaking Bad. So that's next on the list. And it might go concurrently with Ozark, to be honest.
Yeah, that's funny. You and I are two of the only people who haven't watched those programs. And a good friend of mine, I'll give a shout out to my friend Steve Gleason. He's finally getting around to The Sopranos. I think he's almost done with season 3, the last I talked to him. And he's killing me for not watching Ozark. I think he's actually taking offense to it at this point. I said, hey, there's just some timing in my life that has to be right before I can really enjoy it. But yes. I'm like you and a lot of people that when I get into something, if I dig it, I will plow through it. Like there's almost like, I don't know, some urgency, like the show's going to go away in a week or two.
Yep.
You know, I guess maybe there's some compulsiveness to my personality that speaks to. But so I will hopefully, I'm trying to avoid spoilers. And, you know, there are a lot of great shows I know nothing about. A lot of people have said Schitt's Creek is really good. I haven't got a chance to see that yet, of course, because I'm rewatching The Sopranos myself because, you know, my life would be incomplete if I didn't watch that series for like the fourth time. But do have a lot of time in my hands, and let's dive into some baseball. I'll set up the show for you today. Last week, we did guys we were trying to avoid. This week, we're going to do the my guys portion of the program. We're going to talk about guys that we're targeting or have already rostered at pretty decent ADPs. The idea of this is generally not to have guys in the first or second round. We'd all love Mike Trout or Christian Yelich or Ronald Acuna. Let's try to be a little bit less obvious than that. And then, a lot, of course, if you have Trout, that probably speaks to what draft slots you've been landing, right? I mean, if you pick 10th in your league, you're not getting Christian Yelich.
Yeah,
that's how it works. But by the way, Paul, I've always been struck by how much you look like Christian Yelich. Do you hit about as well as Yelich?
I wish.
Maybe a little faster.
I hit a little bit more like Miami Yelich, if anything. Definitely not Milwaukee Yelich, but okay. I love that comparison because it's definitely favorable to me and kind of rude to him, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope somebody's come up to him like that. Say, hey, man, yeah, I love your work on Fangraphs.
Yeah, you look like this fantasy baseball guy. Like, he gets Pete Davidson a lot, the guy from SNL.
There you go.
So those two.
Okay, so we're going to do the guys. We're going to do our guys, our targets, or our guys that we already have in our portfolio, however you want to define that. We'll go through a bunch of different positions. And then at the draft portion of the show, at the end, we're going to draft all-time uniforms / logos, whatever people want that to be. Any sport is in play. We'll go 5 rounds on that, and we'll have a lot of fun with that. And by the way, if you enjoy the show that Paul and I do today, we did an all-time Michigan draft last year, which was really a blast. We blew it out. It was really long. I'm not sure everybody who edited the podcast was that happy as long as it was, but we had a lot of fun with it.
It was a blast. Yeah,
it really was a blast. So hopefully we'll have a lot of fun with that draft today. But let's try to help some people. We're still hoping we're going to have a baseball season, and you can still draft right now. You can draft a fantasy baseball team at Yahoo or fantasy football if you so desire. So, Paul, let's talk about some of these guys we've been drafting on our own teams. I guess we'll start in the infield at first base. Who is one of Paul Sporer's guys at first base this season?
So my lone guy who's probably up at the higher register here is Matt Olson, but I really like him to the degree where I'm considering him, a real top rounder, top four round type guy. I think he can be an absolute monster at first base. I think he can challenge for the home run crown. He had the Hammett injury last year. It did not hamper his power. We all were worried, oh no, get away from Matt Olson. He had the Hammett surgery. It didn't matter. Came back, could have hit 40 plus with a full season. I don't think he needs any sort of juiced ball. If we do play something where they're in Arizona in smaller parks, that's only going to play more favorably to him. So I think he's one of the top ranked first basemen there, as high as four or five, with maybe truly only Freeman and Bellinger that I guaranteed would put above him. And then I would let others draft Alonso and Goldschmidt before I would even have to take Olsen. So I'd probably take him fifth off the board. But push come to shove, I'd prefer him to Alonso, especially at their draft cost.
Yeah, one of my favorite things as far as targeting players, and it's going to come into play a lot of times for me, is when I know somebody's good, but they're discounted for something that I can look past. In the case of Olsen, he was hurt last year, and he came back from it and hit with so much power that I got to figure that's totally in his rearview mirror. And yet, because he played a partial season, it probably makes the price a little bit cheaper. And I love anytime I can get a player who's cheaper for a reason that I don't think you have to worry about. I think you've tapped into something valuable here. I have two first basemen I wrote down. Josh Bell is the first guy, and I think he's just getting a little bit of a discount because he's on a Pirates team that isn't going anywhere. And I know he's not that great against lefties, although he still did slug 448 against them. I can live with that because he's gonna slug over 600 probably against righties. The average wasn't as high at Pittsburgh, but he had really good numbers on the road. I feel like he could do a lot more in Pittsburgh, a park that probably should suit him. And I think I'm just getting a little bit of the stink discount because nobody wants to touch the Pirates. And staying with that stink discount theme, I know Eric Hosmer isn't worth the contract, and I know the Padres probably regret it, or in a clear day they would regret it. But he plays every day, and last year he hit 260, but I think it's more realistic he'll probably hit around 280, and he'll get to counting stats just by being in the middle of what looks like a solid lineup to me. We don't have to pay Eric Hosmer. We're not on the hook for his contract. We're not responsible for whatever mistake San Diego did in signing Hosmer. I think the fact that he has a solid job, a solid spot in the lineup, and first base isn't as deep as it used to be. It used to be a
No.
position where I felt like you could do well at any price point. It's funny. Now I think shortstop's like the fun zone. And I think first base is actually, you got to have some kind of a plan coming into first base because it's a time, if you haven't addressed it, you can feel stuck at that position. It's not that anybody drafts Hosmer and is excited about it, but because a lot of people in the room just won't touch him anymore, or just they feel like he's like a piece of nuclear waste, I'll take him as my utility. I'll take him as my corner guy. In a shallower league, he might even be on your bench. It's not that Eric Hosmer is a great player. Maybe he's been overrated for years. Remember, the question used to be Freddie Freeman or Eric Hosmer. It just sounds crazy now that that was ever a thing.
I know.
But he's not, he's going to play though. And he's gonna, he's got some real estate. And I think that makes him, I just want the numbers. I don't care if it's actually a good contract for the Padres or not.
I think you've highlighted on something that's really important in fantasy is and a disconnect that people have about bad contracts. What do we care for if it doesn't relate to their fantasy value? And in the case of somebody like Hosmer, who is a volume play, while I'm not a big fan of him, nobody is. So he gets pushed way down. And in a game where volume can play so well, the dude is a rock. And so I think you and I both tend to play deeper formats as well. So somebody like Eric Hosmer, who you're plugging into that corner or utility spot every single day, is valuable. He had 99 ribbies last year. And people are planning for the Padres to be good again, or to be better this year. He's going to benefit from that in some form or fashion, even if the batting average doesn't jump back up closer to his career 278. So I hear you on Hosmer. If you're that hung, you should not be hung up on his contract. Like Scott said, you're not paying it. What do you care for?
Who you got second base, Paul?
So at second base, I'm going with Luis Arraez from the Minnesota Twins. This was a guy I kind of had to be sold on because when I first originally saw him, I was like, empty batting average. What else are we getting here? But then I really kind of dug in, actually had some commenters in one of my articles where I made that point about him, kind of educate me a bit more on his skills. And, you look at that elite strikeout rate. This guy does not strike out anywhere near what we see in the majors these days. And he walks more than he strikes out. So, yeah, he's not going to be a power guy. but he's going to be a big average and runs guy. Two factors that are often overlooked. They're arguably the two most disregarded of the 5x5 categories. And maybe average isn't necessarily disregarded. It's just that it's all usually compacted into the front of the draft because the best guys hit for average. So to find some batting average late with something else. And I also think that there's a case that he could hit, I don't know, 11 to 13 homers in a full season, which is not great, especially in this power environment. But it's not a complete zero. It's not two. It's not D. Gordon's two home runs or something like that. I just love somebody in that lineup who can get on base at that clip, 399 last year, which is very much in line with what Arias did in the minors. He's going to score runs for days in that Minnesota lineup. So give me some late batting average, big run total, and I'll take what I can get out of him as far as homers and stolen bases, which is probably going to be between, I would say, 9 to 12 of each.
Yeah, you hit a lot of key points there that underscore ways that I play out. Anytime anybody has more walks than strikeouts, that immediately gets my radar up. And putting the ball in play is such an important part of today's game where there's just so many strikeouts. And you nothing can go right for you when you strike out. It's okay if you hit for a ton of power. We're going to accept the strikeouts. But in the case of Arias, he needs to put the ball in play, and he does. And I don't understand why runs are just less sexy than RBIs, but we live in a world where people love RBIs, and I think a lot of times they overlook runs. And my teams are always, I used to always do well on the runs category and not realize why. And I realized, well, okay, it's because I'm prioritizing batting slot. You know, I want my guys at the top of the lineup, and I want my guys in good lineups and stuff like that. And a lot of times when I need to do a sort, if I'm not going to look at something second or third level as an actual metric, I'll just sort by runs scored because I think it's a proxy for a lot of things that we're trying to get anyway. I think that's a really good pick. My second baseman is Kevin Biggio. You look at this Toronto offense, okay? There's a lot of legacy power here. There's a lot of star power, a lot of name power. People are excited about Bichette. They should be. Vladimir Guerrero has been somebody people were excited about even when he was in the minor leagues. People couldn't wait for him to get promoted. The one year they didn't promote him last year, little bit of a disappointment, but I mean, he's still expected to be a star someday. I feel Biggio, the son of Craig Biggio, gets you part of this lineup that's going to be fun, but you don't have to pay as much as maybe a Bichette or a Guerrero. 16 homers last year, so he's got some pop. I know he only hit 234, but he's got a really high walk rate. He pushed his OBP way up to 364. And this is a stat I love with Biggio. 14 stolen bases, caught zero times.
Love that.
Which says to me that this is a guy who could probably, maybe in a full season, could steal 30 bases, 35 bases. Now, we play in a time in Major League Baseball where the stolen base has been de-emphasized, and there may be a point where they say, hey, look, you got good hitters behind you. We don't want you running that much. I mean, I can understand that, but he's going to be parked in the middle of this lineup. He's going to get on base. He's a combination of power and speed. He's got some pedigree from his father. I know he wasn't drafted that high, fifth round in the second time he went drafted out of Notre Dame. But I think it's a way to get into this, some exposure to Toronto without having to pay too much for it. He also qualifies in Yahoo and at second base and outfield, so I get some flexibility there. I'm scooping up a lot of Kevin Biggio.
I love all of that, and I'm right there with you. In fact, he was a guy I was considering as well, and I kind of decided to leave him thinking that you might go ahead and put him on your list. So I'm glad you did. I would have at least given him a cursory mention if you hadn't. I like Biggio as well. I like that Blue Jays offense. I also like the other of the, I call him the Kin Four because it's three sons and a brother with Gurriel Jr. I like Gurriel Jr. too. He's cheap and another way to get into that lineup pretty nicely without paying the top dollar of Bichette and Guerrero.
Totally agree. And he's actually, I have him tucked in the outfield, but I'm not sure exactly where they're going to play him, but I may talk about him later. What are you doing at shortstop?
So at shortstop, I'm going for Didi Gregorius, kind of going back to the well on somebody who is pretty well established and we know. Now, obviously, things could change a bit. Actually, they wouldn't even really change. Never mind. Because even if they played in a Arizona, Florida type deal, again, those are going to be smaller ballparks. I think that's going to fit power profiles. So if anything, that could be better. But if they do go back to their parks and he goes to his new park in Philadelphia, he's still in a power-friendly ballpark. This dude put up 20, 25, and 27 homers for the 3 years before last year, and even in last year, half season, 16 homers. I know the 238 batting average was definitely way down for Gregorius, but he doesn't strike out a lot, and a 237 BABIP did a lot of work there. And if he had gotten the other 80 games of a season, or say 70 of them, I think a lot of that would have kind of come back to his 278 career BABIP level, at least, if not higher, to kind of balance it out. You know, it doesn't really work like that, that just because you're low, you're going to be high. I know statistically it doesn't, but with a lot of baseball players, it actually does. You know, they run cold for 2 months, then they run hot for another 2 months. And so I know the statistical principles say, you know, don't just say because they were down in average here, they're going to be up for the next couple months. But a lot of guys do go like that. So I would still see Gregorius as a 270, 265 batting average type, plenty of power, chip in steals, in a good lineup. I like Gregorius, and he's so cheap because shortstop is so incredibly deep.
Yeah, you know what I really like about Gregorius? I mean, I could agree with pretty much everything you said. But when you look at his average, you just have to throw out the 238. I mean, the guy was coming off a major injury, wasn't playing for half a season. Look at his four previous years in New York, where his batting average was anywhere from 265 as a low, 287 as a high. And now, if you hit in the high 260s, that actually, in a lot of fantasy leagues, that will actually be a benefit. At least it will be neutral. So this guy isn't going to hurt you in average and could theoretically help you in average if we go by the four prior full seasons he played in New York. He's got power. And again, you're getting a nice discount because people just look at, okay, it's almost like last year just takes him off some people's boards. He's changed teams. He hit 238. I don't want this guy. Doesn't run anymore. You know, all I want him to do is chip in. And, you know, 5 to 8 stolen bases means something in today's base. I mean, you may have to prorate it for a partial season, but you talked about Arias not being a total zero in power. I love guys who aren't a total zero in stolen bases. Not that they have to run a ton. Just give me a few. Give me a handful. Mm-hmm. Chip in at it. And I think that makes an impact. So, you know, we talk about why do you get a discount on a player, you know, Gregorius had an injury, didn't play half a season, had a very unusually low batting average for him. And I just don't think that's who he is. I think you have to project him to hit maybe 268, knowing he could even hit 270 or 280. So I think he's a really nice value. Sticking with a player who's discounted for a reason I can totally look past, I have Dansby Swanson as my shortstop target. Again, he's really cheap right now because the position's incredibly deep. But I mean, last year he was having a monstrous breakout year. His numbers at the All-Star break, okay, a little bit past the halfway point of the season. He's hitting 270, 493 slugging. He had 17 home runs, had 7 stolen bases, only 7 for 11 on the steals. So, I mean, it wasn't like he was lighting the world on fire percentage-wise. But, I mean, he was a 5-category player, 58 runs, 57 RBIs. What a season. And then he gets hurt, comes back, can't do anything right. He hits 204 in the second half, doesn't even hit a home run. So you just have to – he was hurt. And he's going to have plenty of time to be healthy because we don't know when the season's starting. He was at one point the number one or number two prospect in baseball. He's the number one pick in his draft class. He's still, 26 right now? So he's still theoretically in his prime ages. The only thing I worry about with Swanson is that Atlanta's lineup is so deep, he may start the season lower in the lineup, and that can sometimes be a deterrent for stolen bases. If he's batting anywhere near the pitcher when he's on base, maybe they bunt him over, stuff like that. So I'd like Swanson a lot more if he somehow got elevated to maybe the first or second spot in the lineup. Right now, it doesn't look like that's the case. So I may have to live with fewer at bats and maybe fewer opportunity to run. But man, I don't feel like I'm even calling a breakout season for Swanson so much. I just want him to be healthy and to play somewhere in the neighborhood of what he did last year in the first half. I feel like he's already demonstrated what his ceiling might be, which is like pretty much a star player. And outside of the top 200 ADP in a lot of leagues, I just think they're giving you Swanson for free, and I'm going to take as much of it as I can get.
Yeah, I think what Swanson was doing last year is heavily slept on. And again, you know, part of it is the depth of position. Part of it is the awful finish. And then another part of it is the fact that Swanson was a prospect, part of it was defensive value. And I think that people have kind of put that on him as like, well, he's not really a fantasy prospect, but look at what he did before he got hurt. And I was really impressed. He was a guy I studied in the offseason of like, whoa, that first half was amazing. And you can't just double it, but even if you just add to that bottom line after the 89 games with 17 homers and 7 stolen bases, that's a great season. So I like the Swanson call out. He was a consideration for me as well.
What are you doing at third base?
I'm going to go with Gio Urshela. And I try not to get too crazy on previous season breakouts who came out of nowhere, but that's usually when they're attached with a high price. And Gio Urshela is not. I think he's actually been a bit forgotten there, as I believe there are some concerns about his playing time that I don't really agree with. I know Miguel Andujar is coming back, and he's got a bat that says he needs to be playing pretty regularly, but I don't think it's going to be at third base because he has a glove that says he should be DH only. And I think that's going to foster more of Judge and Stanton in the outfield, which I know puts them at a bit of risk for health. But Judge is an elite defender, and Stanton's actually a pretty solid one. So it's not like they're out there playing like Nelson Cruz. It's just that the only reason that it'd be ideal to have one of them DH is for their health. But when you've got Urshela, who can pick it at third, and a guy like Andujar who can hit, you're going to have to put Stanton and Judge out there. So I think Urshela's playing time is going to be fine. He comes out, hits 314 last year, 21 homers. I think in a full season, he probably hits similar home run total. I wouldn't extrapolate that to any sort of real degree. Maybe add a couple on, closer to 25 homers for a full season. But I think the batting average is something that I really like. He doesn't strike out a ton. He doesn't walk a ton either, but he makes contact. He's in a great lineup. I like Gio Urshela. I think he'll be a solid play, and he doesn't really cost me much at third base or corner, which is usually where I'm putting him.
Yeah, you hit on a couple of key points here. I mean, the defense, why do we care about fantasy defense? If it marks your spot in the lineup, in the case of Urshela versus Andujar, I mean, they need Urshela's got the glove and Andujar doesn't. I mean, the Yankees are going to take that seriously. And like you, I get nervous when a player has a breakout year that came out of nowhere. You're not sure what to do. And a lot of people will just scream at, oh, regression. Urshela, you know, 314, 355, 534, he's not that good. To which I say, well, his Yahoo ADP right now is like 230. So he can actually give back a lot of what he did last year, and you can still make your money or make a profit at that price. So whenever somebody is facing that regression season, but the market doesn't believe in them, then I want to scoop that guy up. You know, it's different when a player who was touted to be a star has a breakout season, and then the next year you have to pay up for that guy.
Yeah.
Or you look at somebody, I know this is apples and oranges, but look at like the year Liam Hendricks had in Oakland. He had a dominant season out of the bullpen. It doesn't fit the rest of his career, but now you have to pay for him. Like, he's a sure thing. Maybe some people will do it. Maybe some people won't. In the case of Urshela, as long as he stays in the lineup all year, and this is survivor bias, he won't stay in the lineup if he's not hitting him. If he's hitting 180, they're eventually going to replace him. But
sure,
as long as he stays reasonably healthy and stays in the lineup, I don't know how you don't make your money here. I don't know how it doesn't scream out profit just because the price is so cheap and there's too much regression or too much uncertainty baked into that price.
Yeah, I think it's, and it's a lineup you want to get into too. Same with what I'm doing with Arias, getting into the Minnesota lineup. It's an easy way into a good lineup with Urshela.
Right. It's the simplest thing in the world, but just keep, you know, it's like in fantasy football, we want to go where the points are. We want to, you know, you want to get tied to a good quarterback. You want to get tied to a team that's in a winning situation. Same thing in fantasy. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I know I was promoting Josh Bell earlier, but you know, you have to, at the end of a fantasy draft, you better look at your team and think, okay, you know, there's my Rocky and there's my Yankee and there's my Red Sox and all that. You want guys in those teams. And I know it's, we're going to have to deal with possibly, and I don't really know, Paul, to be honest with you, what to do about this. Maybe we'll talk about it on a future podcast. And I'm not drafting right now, so it's not really a factor for me. But until I know that something's going to happen with different ballparks and everything, I'm just kind of ignoring it.
Me too.
I'm just putting it off for a later date. At some point when they, if they come up with that, if they come up with a plan where they're playing in Arizona and they're playing in Florida, then I'm going to have to know these parks and you know, it's going to totally change the valuation of some teams. You know, I just did a draft for you were in the DVR auction last week, right?
No, I was not, but I'm familiar with it, the triple auction.
Right. So I drafted a couple of Rockies and you know, wherever they play in Arizona, I know Arizona is generally a good place to hit for spring training, but
that's the thing.
Not like going to be Coors Field.
It won't be Coors. And so there'd be a little bit of nerve-wrackingness there to make up a word. But I think it's still going to be a good environment. I'm actually, I kind of lean into the Rockies stuff. So the drafts that I've already done have got some Rocky-laden tinge to it. And, you know, I am a little bit nervous of that. But again, in Arizona, you can hit very well.
My third baseman, I kind of have a theory with fantasy that the less exciting something is to do, a lot of times I think it's right. And the more exciting something is to do, a lot of times I think you pay a premium for it.
Yep.
And there's nothing exciting about Chris Bryant anymore. He's already had his MVP season in 2016. He hasn't been a great RBI guy the last few years, despite playing full seasons two of the three times and being in the middle of ostensibly a good lineup. Now it sounds like he might hit leadoff, to which I say, hey, career 385 OBP, you know, a decent average guy, get him extra bats. I don't mind. If his fantasy profile over a full season is going to be more about, you know, scoring 100 plus runs and only driving in 60 or 70 runs, I can live with that. I just feel like Bryant has become an old, boring player who, by the way, this is his age 28 season. He's really not that old yet. So, again, because people are kind of over Bryant, it's not that anybody's panning him so much, but there's no race to get Chris Bryant. I mean, I can remember people took him in the second round before he was even called up in some leagues in 2015 because he was a shiny new toy. Now he's an old, boring toy that's been tossed to the middle of the pile. Again, not that people are disrespecting him, but I feel like there's no – people don't go to their auctions and their Chris Bryant jersey all excited to get. Just, people moved on to more guy, you know, guys who are more exciting. Maybe Anthony Rendon is more exciting to people because he's off a monster season. Obviously, Guerrero is kind of the new kid on the block. So I think you get a half round to a round discount on Bryant just because he's a boring guy that people are over a little bit. I think the idea that him hitting leadoff has been misunderstood. You're going to gain at bats. Yes, you'll give up some RBIs. You may gain some runs scored. You may gain some hits. He's a plus average guy. He may help your average a little bit. So also qualifies a couple of positions, which is nice. So to me, Chris Bryant, you know, the boring old guy who's only 28. Yeah, give me all that.
I agree with pretty much everything you've said there about Chris Bryant. And I don't quite understand why there's that much vitriol put toward him. But yeah, it's still a superstar potential talent too. Like, he can still absolutely go off. He hit 31 homers last year with a .282 average. Yeah, only 77 ribbies, but 108 runs. Cubs aren't going to be bad. They might not be a great team, but they're not going to be bad. Doesn't strike out a ton for a power hitter. Can take his walks. I agree with you. I think there's still superstar upside too.
Give me a couple of guys in the outfield.
So two guys I'm looking at, Franmil Reyes on Cleveland. Obviously, he got traded over there, and now he can find his home for the next maybe decade as a DH, which is where he should be, and Brian Anderson of the Miami Marlins. With Reyes, you know, he's a guy that the power is unquestioned, and I think the playing time kind of is too. Even if he does need to play a little bit in the outfield, if only because the Cleveland Indians have not done a good job addressing their outfield. Now, hopefully they don't put Reyes out there, even though there is a penalty for hitting DH, about a 10% penalty overall. It doesn't affect every player equally, but even with that, I'm fine with it. Leave Reyes there at DH. He hit 37 homers last year with his eyes closed, basically. And, you know, .249 average. If all I got was a repeat of 19 from Reyes, I'd be perfectly happy with it. But I do think there's some upside to do a little bit more, particularly with the batting average, because he strikes the ball so well. He doesn't run, so he can't really turn a huge BABIP for a full season. He had a .345 in 87 games back in 18. That was definitely fluky, and it would have come down if he had played, you know, the rest of that season there. But I do think he strikes the ball so well that he can maintain something over the 300 mark, and he was only at .279 last year. So I think there is a little bit of batting average upside with Franmil Reyes to be more of like a .260 to .265 guy with insane power. Cleveland's lineup is a little bit slept on, even though I did just chastise them for not doing much with their outfield. They still have Lindor, Mercado, Santana, Ramirez, and I did like the Cesar Hernandez pickup. So I like Franmil Reyes out there as their DH. He's an outfielder in our game, and so I'm definitely open to getting him. And he goes around to Kyle Schwarber. I kind of like the both of them, to be honest, especially if you're
also you mentioned Cesar Hernandez, by the way. He's another guy I could have used at second base. I think he's one of the best outside the top 200 targets.
It was a great pickup by them, and they made such a good move there. I don't know why they haven't really addressed the outfield. It still doesn't compute to me with what they've with what they're doing over there. But I do like what they've done with Reyes. That was a good pickup, and I'm excited to see what he can do for not a full year, but you know, what he can do as a perma DH now. And then Brian Anderson kind of fits the boring Hosmer mold that we talked about earlier, where it's a guy who there's nothing flashy about him, but there's a lot of good, and the only thing that held him back last year was a little bit of an injury, so he was limited to 520 plate appearances. He still put up 20 homers as a Miami Marlin in that time. They move the fences in. He's a .267 career hitter. I think he can be a mid-20s home run guy if he kind of work the numbers a little bit with what he did last year in 126 games. give him back another 156 that he had the previous year. I think you see that power land in the mid-20s. The runs and ribbies, I think, are actually going to be mildly decent this year. Miami turned their offense into a non-awful one. They're still going to be a bad team, make no mistake. But the acquisitions of VR, Aguilar, Dickerson, plus some growth. I'm an Isan Diaz guy. I think he can improve. So that offense is going to be a bit better, and it's going to help Anderson on both the runs and Ribby's counts. So I think he's just a really solid guy to get as maybe your fourth outfielder, a corner type, because he also has third base eligibility. I just really like him. And, you know, we talk about getting on the good teams, but sometimes the guys on the bad teams are overlooked specifically because they're on the bad team. And I think Brian Anderson is that way. But I don't think that offense is going to be quite as bad this year.
If you're playing in a public league or in a less competitive league, it's entirely possible that you could take Brian Anderson really late and somebody in your league might not even know who he is. What team is he on? Who does he play for? What position is he a pitcher? You're going to have some people who don't even know who he is.
They're going to think about the old school pitcher named Brian Anderson.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, confusing him with the previous Brian Anderson. And as you said, Miami moved the fences in. They've tried to address this offense. You know, VR, I know he's kind of a polarizing guy, but he offers some skills batting leadoff. Corey Dickerson, I've always thought, is a good player. He's going to bat third. Oh, yeah. Aguilar fourth. Even Jorge Alfaro has some power deeper in the lineup. And this looks like, it's not going to be a great team, but this looks like an improved team. And they move the dimensions in. That's going to help scoring. So if you're going to take a player on a lesser team, at least you're going to get the extra volume because Anderson's going to hit second. So it's, you know, is it better to have him or have a player in a good team who bats eighth? I mean, I think you might be better off with Anderson. I love the position flexibility. So there's a lot of stuff there that makes sense. The guys I had listed in the outfield, the first guy, just totally to suck up to my Detroit Tiger loving friend, Paul Sporer, I'm going to take Nicholas Castellanos, who was always just one of the shining gems on a bad Tiger team the last couple of years. He goes to Chicago and just rips the cover off the ball. And that's what he does. He's always had excellent exit velocity, hard hit rate. Those are stats where he's always shined. I wouldn't have minded if he stayed with the Cubs just because everything went so well there. But he goes to Cincinnati, deep lineup, plus park. I just feel like he's just been he's like a band that not everybody knows about, but everybody who knows about the band loves it, you know?
That's a great analogy. I love that.
That's who he is. It's just something, I feel like you're in like a speakeasy club when you're in the Nick Castellanos fan group. And I don't think his price is totally gone crazy yet. We talked about Gurriel earlier as a way to get exposure to that Toronto lineup without maybe having to pay the full premium. I'm also curious what David Peralta might do in Arizona lineup. I mean, he had a really good season 2 years ago, and then last year he was hurt. I know he doesn't hit lefties that great, but he's not going to be platooned. He hits cleanup behind the two Martes and Eduardo Escobar, at least on paper right now, and then Christian Walker in the fifth spot. So not a bad lineup. Yeah, Arizona's not the same park. They've changed it, and now it's a lot closer to neutral. It may even be a pitcher park now. But again, because Peralta was hurt last year, I think people are maybe pushing him into the pocket of the draft that he shouldn't be in. I still think he's a top 200 player, and you probably don't have to pay that much to get him.
I have loved Peralta because I've always just been a fan. I talked about it earlier with Arias, late batting average. You rarely see it. And Peralta was always my late batting average oasis. And then he popped that big 30 homer season. I had a lot of it. So I've always had a soft spot for him now. And then last year, of course, his price went way up. It still wasn't even crazy, though, after the 30 homer season. Now it comes way back down because he hit another injury. He's 32, but I don't double count an injury history because it's built into the price. For me, I don't like when people do that, when they say, this guy costs this. And then they list his negatives to like push him down further. I'm like, no. That's why he's down here. That's why David Peralta costs what he does because of the injuries. If he didn't have the injury history, he'd be, you know, 4 or 5 rounds higher. So I like Peralta. That's a good call out for sure. And I love Castellanos too. Cincinnati, I was on that club before they even got Akiyama and Castellanos, they got Moose first. So they got Moose, and I'm like, oh, I like this team. I like their pitching. Then they got Castellanos and Akiyama, and I'd already had a bet in for them to win the Central and a World Series one just as a fun type of thing. Nothing crazy as far as those bets go. You know, $10 here, they're just a spike something. Then they got Castellanos and Akiyama. So I love that Cincinnati club. Great call out for Castellanos.
That's a fun division. I don't think Pittsburgh will be good, but you get 4 teams that are all interesting and flawed in different ways. And I could see any of the other 4 winning the division. So I think Cincinnati, as far as a value play, is a great future of, you know, if we actually get a season in and we you have time to dip into the future market, I think there's a lot of value with the Reds. I don't think the catcher pool is all that interesting, but I did ask you to name a catcher. We'll go speed round on the catchers, and then we'll have more time to talk about the pitchers. Who did you list a catcher?
I listed Tom Murphy, who's a guy I looked a little bit at in Colorado, and he never really came through. For some reason, they can't find a catcher to save their lives since, like, Will and Rosario. But Tom Murphy came through with some big power last year, and is going to have the full-time role. Now, he is going to share a bit with Austin Nola, who I actually like, too. And I would have listed him if he was catcher eligible. He's not. He's a sneaky guy to get on your reserve in deeper leagues, Austin Nola, who's going to get catcher eligibility relatively quickly into the season. So I kind of like the whole Seattle platoon there. They're both righties, but Nola can actually hit better against righties. Murphy crushes lefties. But I like to go cheap at catcher for the most part. I don't want to be the cheapest guy, but I usually go in the middle of the pack there. And Murphy's kind of a middle guy. I think he can hit a 25 homers. He had 18 in 75 games. I believe in some of the power spike. I don't even need the 273 average. I think he hits closer to 250, but I'll take the power with it. Tom Murphy, kind of boring, but solid in Seattle.
Yeah, I try to go thrifty at the catcher spot too. This is only for two catcher leagues. You're not going to do this in a one catcher league, but Tucker Barnhart was hurt last year.
Yes.
Second half, he's healthy, made some tweaks, had an OBP, I think a 367 in the second half. His OPS was over 800. That's probably out of his shoes. He's not quite that good, but he's going to play every day, and if you're in a two-catcher league, you might be able to get him for a dollar or for your one of your late-round picks, and I think he's useful in two-catcher formats. That's really all the words he's probably worth right now. Let's get to the juicy part of the pitching mound. Give us a couple of starting pitchers that you're drafting this year.
So two guys I've been on big time, one at the higher end of the register and then in the middle, Frankie Montas from Oakland and Aaron Civale from Cleveland. I love what Frankie Montas did last year. And yeah, he got a PED suspension, but I don't think what he did was made of PEDs. I rarely find that to be the case with a pitcher or even really a hitter, if I'm being honest. I don't care about PED suspensions. If they cheat, they need to get punished, but I don't hold that against them going forward. I don't play morality cop with regards to the PED situation. We've seen him put it together over the years. He started as a flamethrower who could strike everybody out, but walked the world and gave up too many hits when he didn't hit his zones. Then he figured out the walk rate in 2018, but lost the strikeouts. It was almost like, okay, I'm just going to live in the zone, Montas said. Then last year, he put it all together. The strikeout rate came back. The walk rate got even better, and he was difficult to hit. He developed that split finger to go with the fastball slider combination. Now he has three pitches he can rely on. I love what Oakland does with pitchers. He might not be playing in the O.co, but I'm not terribly worried about him, even in more hitter-friendly environments. Big fan of Frankie Montas. And then Aaron Civale in Cleveland. Cleveland's become a pitching factory at this point. So a little bit is going toward the organization and trusting what they've been able to do with so many different pitchers. I think Civale is, now I don't think he is Bieber, but I think he's more Bieber than he is Josh Tomlin or Adam Plutko. So if I'm putting him on that scale, I'm going Bieber way up at the top. Obviously, Kluber was at the tippy top. Then Bieber, couple slots down, Civale, big jump down to where guys like Plutko and Tomlin were. I think Civale has a kitchen sink arsenal. He got bigger swinging strike rates in the minors. This year, when he was in the majors, he was just working to get outs however he could, which is what a lot of pitchers say they do when they first get up there. They're not worried about striking everybody out. They're just trying to get outs. He doesn't walk guys. I think he has strikeout upside, going to be 25 years old. I really like Aaron Civale for the Cleveland Indians as well.
And it's always nice when you can get pitchers. In the case of Civale, you're getting Lindor's defense. In the case of anybody on Oakland, if we play a regular season, you get the huge park. And even if they play a different type of season, you still get Chapman. You still get, you know, Marcus Semien, one of the most improved defenders I've ever seen in my life. This is a guy who's a terrible defender. And he made himself just a good show of what a guy can do when, you know, he really cares about changing the type of player he is. He's improved so much as a hitter, so much of a defender. And it's something about owning those Oakland A's guys that whenever they hit the third base, you know they're out, because Chapman is just a dream in the field. So you get exposure to those guys. I always like having Oakland pitchers for that reason. I'm going to name the two guys I have. I have a lot of Jose Berríos. I had a lot of him last year. And I feel like he's a guy now who, really simple. I think we have a good floor with him. And I think we still have, maybe at his age, untapped upside. I think it's still his upside could be Cy Young contender. And I think his floor right now is one of the best pitchers on team that's favored to win its division. yeah, the White Sox are really interesting this year, but it's still Kansas City. You got Detroit in that division. I mean, there's going to be some soft landings for the Twins. I like their defense also. So Berríos, where he's going right now, I think makes a lot of sense. And I've been taking some Mike Foltynewicz, and I realize, look, he's got no floor. I mean, last year things fell apart for him. But 2 years ago, 200 strikeout guy, I feel like all you want with those late picks is plausible upside. And yep. All you have to do to see the plausible upside of Foltynewicz is look back to 2018 when he was a star. So maybe he can get that going. I'd like to get some exposure to that Atlanta team, a very deep lineup, a very deep staff. And, you know, who knows, maybe if Foltynewicz doesn't pitch well, he might not even be in that rotation. But I'm just looking for upside for my late pitchers. So that's where Foltynewicz comes into play.
You can also look at the close to his season. His final eight starts, he had a 1.94 ERA and 46 in the third. Strikeouts were down at 41, so it wasn't quite a strikeout per inning. But he was really getting it back. He was finally getting that slider back in check. So I think Folty's a great call out, and I'm 1,000% with you on Berríos, where I think his, you know, you're buying what he's been doing the last 3 years, but you're also getting a tinge of upside that I think people are kind of ignoring. A good group of people are ignoring, saying that this is who he is and that's it. I don't agree with that. He's 26 years old. There could still be another level, particularly with the potential strikeout boost. So I like Berríos as well. Good call outs for both.
The older I get, Paul, the less I like chasing saves, drafting saves, about saves. But hey, we're a fantasy baseball podcast. Relief pitch is 5x5, last I checked, includes saves. So give me a reliever or two that have caught your eye.
So, you know, I hate chasing saves, and I hate when people just say you can get them off the wire without accounting for the fact of what sort of resources that's going to tax you in your fab, and the fact that everybody's always after them. I don't care if I have Liam Hendricks and Josh Hader. If a closer comes out, I'm going to look at him in fab just to see. So everybody's looking at the closers in fab. So I don't think you can just say, oh, get them off the wire. So I like to pay for a little bit, even though they're annoying to chase. I like the Washington combo here of Sean Doolittle and Daniel Hudson. I'm not exactly sure who's going to get the job, and I know Will Harris is kind of looming too. I think it's going to come down to Doolittle and Hudson, but I'm down to pay for a premium type guy, somebody, you know, in the first 12, and then get Doolittle and Hudson very close to each other in the middle of the draft. And kind of figure out who's going to take over that role early in the season. Doolittle has had health issues, so has Hudson. It could be a little bit of a headache, but it could also turn out that if one of them just ascends, you're looking at 40 saves on a very good Washington team again, too. So I like both of their skill sets. I know injuries are a role, but that's kind of the role for all pitchers anyway. And so I'm down to get my top guy and then look at one of those two guys, if not both, with Doolittle and Hudson.
Yeah, and I like the way you framed it, where everybody is looking for saves. This isn't like fantasy football, where let's say one of the rookie quarterbacks has a splashy beginning to 2020, and you know Joe Burrow's unowned in your league or whatever, and he's been playing great. The person who owns Patrick Mahomes in your league doesn't care. He's already got Patrick Mahomes. He's not going to touch Joe Burrow. You know that quarterback exactly. Market doesn't apply to everybody else, where everybody's always looking to get saves because they know they can either use them, they're going to need them now, they're going to need them later, maybe they're going to flip them, whatever it is. Everybody
their guy could fall out of favor. You know, you never know.
Right. And they get so much attention. Anybody who does fantasy for a living is going to notice this stuff. And it's, man, again, if you play in a league that's not that competitive and you can rule the waiver wire with an iron fist, yeah, sure. You know, get your saves cheaply because you don't even need advice to win those leagues other than just show up and make sure everybody pays the entry fee on draft day. Nothing wrong with playing in a league that's less competitive, but that strategy will not work in a league where most of the league is engaged and is fighting for every save. A guy I'm talking myself into more and more this year is Hector Neris for a couple of reasons. For one thing, totally on board what he did last year. 2.93 ERA, 1.2 whip, really high strikeout rate. The walk rate was reasonable. A little bit home run friendly. You worry about that. And, of course, that park can be home run friendly. But Joe Girardi is the manager here. And look, I know Joe Girardi has always been a one-closer guy. A lot of that because he had Mariano Rivera. Why wouldn't you just live with the Rivera button if you had to push? Mm-hmm. But Gabe Kapler was just so funky with his bullpen, would do unorthodox things. And I just think there's at least a better chance that Girardi might be a push one button guy and Neris might end up being that guy. I still think Philadelphia profiles to be a playoff contender. I wouldn't call them the favorite in that division. I mean, man, what a tough division because Atlanta's loaded. Washington just won the World Series. They get a big three at the front of their rotation. That's monstrous. Of course, their lineup has some questions, but you know, in ascending to talents like Soto. So you know, Washington's a problem. And the Mets, you know, are at least going to be decent. It sucks that they lost Syndergaard, but there's still a lot of talent on that Mets team. But I think Philadelphia can contend. I think they maybe could make the playoffs and maybe could even win that division. And maybe Hector Neris, I mean, you know, he did have 28 saves last year. Maybe he could be the automatic guy who gets that button pushed. And he's, right now the price is pretty reasonable. In Yahoo Leagues, his ADP is 122. So totally I'm fine with that. I'm also talking myself into Joe Jimenez a little bit in Detroit. I know they're not going to be a good team, but I feel like there's a very strong chance that he's the automatic, we're up by three, it's the ninth inning, you're coming in guy.
Guaranteed.
And there's something to be said for that. And normally when you draft a closer on a losing team, of course, look, we know Detroit's rebuilding. You worry about he's going to get flipped at the deadline, but maybe the trade deadline is totally different this year, right? I mean, it's going to be a shorter season. Maybe it'll be a ton of variance. Maybe teams won't know, are we buyers, are we sellers? Maybe they'll just be, I don't think Detroit will be contending, but I just have a feeling we're going to see a much different trade deadline this year, and maybe it means that a guy like him isn't traded. And remember last year, everybody was freaking out all season about Alex Colome. Oh, you better get rid of him. He's going to get traded. And the White Sox kept him. And he's still at the top of their closer depth chart. He needs to pitch well because the White Sox actually have incredible depth below Colome. They have a bunch of guys who have closer stuff or closer resumes. So I think they have a ton of answers if Colome doesn't do it. But Neris is a guy I'm interested in. And Jimenez, again, if you're going to draft a pitcher on a lesser team, you have to feel really confident that he's got the job to start the season. In the case of Jimenez, I think we can say that.
I like both your picks there, and I almost put Neris as my guy, so I'm glad that you got him some shine. And I'm with you on Joe Jimenez, too, especially with the trade piece that you bring up with the weird season that we're facing, because, you know, the Tigers aren't going to be good, and they're probably not going to be that good next year, but I think that they can reasonably look at Joe Jimenez. You always got to be careful projecting too far out with any reliever however you are, whether you're running a dynasty team or running a real team, so they don't want to get too far out. But they can realistically start to turn the ship around next year and then start to open the competition window big time in 2022. He'll be 26, 27 around that time. So they'd still like him to be a part of that. I don't think that Jimenez is an automatic trade ship. So I like both your callouts there at closer. Neris is a guy I was thinking of that I would have as my A guy when I would then get the Doolittle-Hudson combo. So great call out there too.
So just a reminder, if you're drafting with Paul Spohr or with myself later this year, you're not allowed to draft any of these guys. You know, show some respect to your esteemed radio hosts here, podcast hosts, and you know, leave Hector Neris for me. Don't take Paul's players. That's just considered rude. So, you know, use this for your own personal use in the leagues that we're on. And that's how I want you to apply this advice and share with us if you have differences of opinion. Sporer on Twitter, Sporer. I'm Scott_Pianowski. Hit us at the Yahoo Fantasy handle. Let us know how you feel about some of our targets and tell us the guys you've been targeting, whether you've drafted them already or you're hoping to draft them later this summer, later this spring. And, you know, let's keep the good thought. Hopefully we'll have a baseball season soon. We're going to transition to our drafts where we let our hair down a little bit. We're going to draft uniforms/logos just to I'm leaving anything on the board. They can be real teams, college teams, pro teams, fake teams, your 15-year-old CYO team. I don't care what it is. Paul, you're going to have the first pick in our uniform draft.
All right. I focused on pro teams, but mm-hmm. I did kind of get out of the baseball realm a little bit. There's going to be plenty of baseball here, but I'm going to start non-baseball, and I'm going to go with a new uniform, the Miami Heat Vice City uniforms, particularly the black ones with the teal and pink lettering and numbers. I thought those were so unbelievably crisp. I loved them. We actually played a little 2K last year, more so last year than this year, and we made our uniforms into these this color scheme. So I think it's really slick the way it plays. And I've actually been eyeing a hat that I want to get. Obviously, no time to go over to a Lids and browse around right now in the state that we're in. But I'm trying to get a Miami Vice hat for that kind of represents these uniforms. So I'm going with that, even though it's not a legacy uniform. I'm going with a flashy new pick there at the top with the Miami Heat Vice City uniforms.
You know, I see teams all the time changing their logos and uniforms. And I always wonder, why not just add an extra uniform and rotate them? I mean, why do you have to change it completely? There's so many teams. It turns out a lot of them in the NFL, where I look at I look at teams, I think, man, I love what their uniforms used to be. Why don't you just wear two or three different uniforms? Because then you're going to have all the more merchandise to sell. I think flooding the market with more choices is always a good thing. And I don't understand that. I think the NBA has been a league that's understood that. The NBA is probably of the four major leagues, the league I care about the least. And yet I feel like the NBA gets it so much when it comes to engagement. They were one of the early leagues to open up highlights and open up engagement and really embrace Twitter and personality. And I just think they've set an example that a lot of the other leagues are behind sometimes. I mean, I feel like hockey sometimes is like two decades behind. But the NBA does a lot of things right. And I think a lot of that is uniforms. Because I know you have Michigan ties, I feel like I have to get this off the board because I'm afraid you'll take it. I just love everything to do. And I don't even remember what your college affiliation was with Michigan stuff. But I just think the University of Michigan has the coolest colors. I love their helmets. I actually have a piggy bank that's a Michigan helmet. I don't put any money in it. I just look at it. It's on my desk. I think the University of Michigan has the coolest colors and the maize and blue. Great story. I was at a hockey game once, a Michigan hockey game. My girlfriend goes over to the merch stand. She's going to buy me a hat. And she says to the student who was handling the stand, she goes, "How much is the yellow hat?" And the guy very politely, but just with a little bit of twinge of attitude, goes, "That's maize, ma'am. That's maize."
I love it.
Yeah, I'm going to take the maize and blue. Anything University of Michigan, that's my first round pick.
Yeah, that was the team I grew up rooting for there. The family was a Michigan family. I have my own alma mater now with the University of Texas. But I will say, if you had left them, they were not getting back to you in your third,
fourth. You can't go wrong with Texas, man. I mean, they get great logo. They got the McConaughey celebrity factor. I've always – Austin's such a cool city. Do you live in Austin?
I do.
Yeah, so –
Still here.
It's one of my favorite places I've never been to. Portland, Austin, and Madison are like the three college towns I really want to. I don't know if Portland's really a college town, but certainly Madison and Austin are. So they're high up on my list to get to.
Yeah, I think you made a great pick there. Do we snake or do we go back and forth?
I will go back and forth.
Okay, so yeah, I would have looked at them either with this next pick, Michigan, or the one after this. But I'm gonna stay Michigan. I'm gonna go Detroit Tigers. It's classic. The one thing I don't like about them, like when I use them on MLB The Show or something, is they don't have a lot of uniform choices because they've been so classic for so long. But you really can't beat the home whites with the English D. That is honestly without I think I can say it without bias. I think a lot of people agree. That is without a doubt one of the cleanest, sharpest uniforms out there. And I've heard plenty of others say it that aren't Detroit Tigers fans. So I don't think I'm just being a total homer here. But I'm going to take my Tigers with the number two pick there.
Oh, the English G is so strong. I mean, look, they had a TV show that was partially centered around the character always having a Tigers hat on.
Exactly.
How many shows can say that? You know, he wasn't wearing a, I don't know what would be a bad logo. He wasn't wearing a New York Mets hat or something. I mean, he had a Tigers hat on, Tom Selleck, Magnum PI. I mean, it speaks for itself. And by the way,
anybody with a mustache wants a Tigers hat, and that's their Halloween costume.
Can't go wrong with that. Great pick. By the way, I never got to Tiger Stadium, which is like a gigantic sporting event. Regret of mine. I can't say regret. I'm still broken up about it.
It was great. And I'm hoping that MLB The Show adds it because they've been adding classic stadiums the last few years. I hope that's next on their list because I would play in that stadium every game that I'm the home team for sure.
Oh, man, God love Tiger Stadium. Well, you picked a team from your childhood. I'm going to pick a team from my childhood. The New England Patriots should be going back to the Pat Patriot red,
yes,
and the logo. And they actually redesigned their logo recently, and maybe it was last week, and I like what they came up with, but that team should be playing in red. I imagine having a great red Patriot logo with that Pat Patriot helmet decal and going away from it. I think it's a huge mistake. Every once in a while, they bring them out. I think they should wear them at least once a year. Bring back Pat Patriot and put the Patriots in red, please.
Couldn't agree with you more on that. My mom laments that every time there's a Patriots game on, which is regularly because they're a widely regarded team. Sticking with red, San Francisco 49ers red uniforms, usually their home jersey, is one of the sharpest out there, especially with the gold pants in the sun, usually in San Francisco, looks brilliant. I think we had a great red-on-red matchup in the Super Bowl there. Obviously, they didn't both wear full red or anything, but with the Chiefs and the Niners. But I'm going to go with the Niners. I've always liked it. They were kind of the Patriots of my childhood, with as good as they were regularly being on national TV. So Jerry Rice became a favorite, probably my favorite non-Lion growing up. So I'm going to go with the Niners home reds.
Great pick. great pick, classic look. And the Niners are one of those teams. I've never actually rooted for them, but I think it's just football's better when the Niners are good. And it was fun to see them make a run last year. I have a lot of good friends in that area, too, who are Niners fans. So I've always been sympathetic to that team, even if I technically haven't been a fan of theirs. Now, anybody who's listened to our drafts over the last couple of years knows that at some point I'm probably going to cheat in this draft. And this is, we've reached the Pianowski cheating round. I'm going to take 1979 baseball uniforms because then I get the Orioles and I get the Pirates and I get the Padres and all these funky uniforms.
You get some insane ones.
Yeah, the Angels were great. They had that great look then. The Brewers, still had the MB helmet all the time, the glove logo. I want to talk to the people who said, oh, yeah, the Orioles bird logo, let's go away from that. Or who said, let's go away from the Brewers helmet, the MB glove logo. Classic. Seriously. Look, the Angels halo. Everybody, I think every Major League Baseball team, like on Friday, should just wear the throwbacks. I know the Padres do some of that. They wear the yep. Gary Coleman mustard throwbacks. There should be more of this. I know we do some of it. I think the Negro League uniforms are awesome, and those baggy uniforms, I can't get enough of those. No team should wear the same uniform for 162 games. It just doesn't make any sense. Again, the NBA was so early to this. They get this. I know they kind of go forward more than back with a lot of it, but
sure.
I hope baseball goes more with it. I want to see, if the Pirates and Orioles are on the schedule this year, I have no idea if they are, and who knows what season we'll even get. I want them, partying like it's 1979.
I think it's a great call out. I like it, and I like the Pianowski cheat moment. I'm going to go with the Kansas City Royals baby blues. Which is both George Brett era, but Bo Jackson. I've got a decent number of baseball jerseys, but my baby blue Bo Jackson is one that never fails to get tons of comments, whether I'm wearing it on stream or out somewhere at a draft. Well, obviously we don't go out anymore, but when I would go to a draft or wear it to a ball game if the Royals were featured, or sometimes I wear it to a minor league game where neither team, it's a neither team association. But yeah, I love a lot of baby blues here. This is only going to be the one I'm going to take. I could have maybe done a spore cheat mode and taken all baby blues like the Chargers, the Royals, and a bunch of others. But
I'll stick with the Royals. Just cheated, I probably would have let that through.
I'll go with just the Royals, but okay. I'll give a hat tip to the Chargers one too, because I almost considered that as well, but I'll stick specifically with the Royals.
I'll consider the Chargers as part of this pick. I just feel like, how could I take a baby blue pick now? It would look really cheap, poor form, and maybe would lead to a commissioner investigation or even a fine. There could even be a fine from the draft.
There could be a fine. You never know.
Yeah. So I think I'm going to give that to you. I don't know if you can see it. I'm wearing a Hartford Whaler hat.
I see that, yes.
And
I noticed it as soon as we got on video.
Yeah, this hat gets comments all the time. I don't wear it to be a conversation piece, but some people look at it and just go, cool hat. Some people look at it and say, is that a Hartford Whaler hat? And one thing I love about this logo is that there's in the negative space, there's an H for Hartford that I did not see for like 20 years. I don't know. You can say that that's just me being an idiot, but it's a defunct team. They don't exist anymore. Every once in a while, when you see a Carolina Hurricanes hockey game, there'll be the random Hartford Whaler fan in the stands with the sticking out like a sore thumb, blue and green jersey. I think the logo is great. I think the team is enhanced by the fact that they were never really any good. They show up every once in a while in a pop culture moment. They were mentioned in Chasing Amy very briefly, a movie that didn't age very well. But I love everything about the Whale. I think mostly I love it because the team doesn't exist anymore, and so they're forever in my memory. They had a great fight song that they played, that Brass Bonanza, which is outstanding. So I love everything about the Whalers, and I am often wearing a Hartford Whaler hat.
It's a great call out, and it is an awesome logo. And dope hat, and you had to go with we both went with the teams of the hat we're wearing. We're in a Tigers hat right now, so we stayed true to that. I'm going to finish with baseball, and I'm going to go very specific, although I like their entire uniform set. I'm going to go with the Oakland A's Kelly Greens that they wear with decent regularity these days, and I appreciate that. I believe they still let their starting pitcher pick the uniform. I know that's something that they were doing when they had those yellows that they were rotating in, but I love the Kelly Green. That is basically a throwback, but they've incorporated it more into their everyday routine. They are a team that embraces the different uniforms that they have, as well as any team in the majors, even though I agree with you that the entire majors could collectively improve upon embracing their uniform sets. But give me Kelly Green, Oakland A's.
Great pick. It's funny. I hate the Oakland Park, but I love everything else about the A's. I love the fans. I love so many of their players. I love there's just been a joie de vivre with that team the last couple of years. It's just been, it's funny how some teams you have no affiliation with, and then by the end of the year, you're like, wow, I love that team. I felt that way about the Brewers a couple of years ago. And the Oakland A's have just, maybe it's because I'm up late a lot watching their games, but the fans that do go to that park are awesome. And they've had a lot of fun players, a lot of fun teams, and a lot of fun looks with their uniform. So I love everything about that pick. With apologies to the Denver Broncos, their old school uniforms. I love the old school Atlanta Falcons uniforms. I don't know why the Rams changed their logo. Those things are worth considering. My final pick is going to be the Toronto Maple Leafs blue uniform. Now, here's the key qualification. It has to have the string, the little tie string in the front. I think any hockey uniform looks better with the string. I'm an original six guy. I think the Rangers uniforms with the string looks great with that, with the diagonal Rangers on it. Obviously, the Red Wings, you know, logo is classic. I mean, you know, in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, you know, Cameron's wearing a Gordie Howe shirt the whole movie, which just shows how timeless that is. I'm a Bruins fan. I love their, you know, the Canadians I could have picked. Their logo's outstanding. So really, let's just say any original six team in the home color with the tie string at the front, just a classic look. You can't go wrong with a hockey jersey, or as I should say, a hockey sweater.
Sweater, exactly. No, great call out there. I love it. I considered the Red Wings. I wasn't going to go too Detroit-centric because I got to be honest, some of the Lions uniforms I like too. I could have gone a lot of different ways with Detroit, but I like that you got some more hockey in there, and the call out with the string in particular is an excellent touch there. So great way to finish.
Man, this is so much fun. If you enjoyed this draft, go back and listen to the Detroit draft or the Michigan draft we did last year with Paul. It was a lot of fun, and I'm really glad we had Paul on today for some fun, for some baseball, you know, just for some checking in with our friend. Paul, tell everybody how they can keep up with the goings-on of Paul Spohr.
So, follow me on Twitter, @Spohr, that's S-P-O-R-E-R, same on Twitch, that's twitch.tv/Spohr. If you're missing your baseball fix, come through. You don't have to play MLB The Show. You don't have to play Out of the Park, although Out of the Park is a simulator. So if you're not a big video game fan, the Out of the Park simulator, I don't have enough time to get into the depth of what they offer, Scott, but you could name a player, an obscure player, they have a card for him. And so basically you build your team by collecting these cards, and you wouldn't believe the depth that they have. And then you simulate against other people, and you have box scores to that's what it satisfies, is the box score fix there. So twitch.tv/Spohr. I'm streaming basically 6-7 days a week these days. So come through, hang out, talk baseball. We're gonna get through this. Obviously, there's bigger fish to fry than getting sports back on the table, but for those of you stuck at home that want some baseball, I got it for you every night on Twitch.
Good stuff. And I'm definitely overdue to check out of the park. And do I need box scores in my life. If you want to follow me, Scott_Pianowski, of course, the Yahoo Fantasy handle. And of course, we have other podcasts. If you're into fantasy football, you know, Liz Loza, Matt Harmon, Eric at home, been doing some great work in preparation for the NFL draft. So, you know, a lot of stuff going on in the NFL. For our guest today, Paul Spohr, who knocked out of the park again, he's always a great guy to talk to. And for our producer, the Big Ragu over Yahoo, keeping us on the air, I'm Scott Pianowski. Let's stay positive. Let's hang in there together. Tell us the uniforms you would have picked. And we'll be back next week with another great guest. We'll talk to you soon.
I'm Michael Isikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Kleidman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, where our current focus is on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, as well as the 2020 elections. Subscribe and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts.